Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and this is your Wiretaps Podcast for Monday, March 2nd, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things going this week?
Very good. Thank you, Graham. Looking forward to getting going again.
Yeah, so this is actually the 34th episode of Wiretaps and the 86th episode of this podcast. I just saw those numbers the other day and I was surprised. And so we're rolling along here. It's all been a blur to me, but I'm having fun.
Very good. Yeah.
Last week we had MIT delivering final interview decisions for round two candidates. And in some cases, obviously that means rejection if you don't get the interview invite. And I feel like we're generally getting closer to the end of the line for all this kind of round two interview invitation sort of season and into decision weeks. Anything that you wanted to kind of note about what's been going on LiveWire? I personally have seen a lot of really good conversations, people kind of helping each other out in terms of figuring out how long they're going to have to wait or what to do in certain situations.
Yeah, there's still, some speculation, obviously, with the schools that roll out the interview invites rather than get them out all in one go, and, whether Yale is still going to invite some folks or Berkeley has. They seem to be the two that stimulate most conversation. But as you point out, I think as we hit sort of the beginning of March, the interview invite season is going to be winding down. Will there be more interview invites? Absolutely. But they will be fewer and far between at this point. And in the next couple of weeks, we'll start to see round two decisions rolling out. So things just change gear completely again during that then 3 or 4 week period.
Yeah, and I am going to make a bold prediction. I think a lot of people who were waitlisted in round one are going to make the cut this year in round two. And we see that happen a lot in general, but I feel like it's going to be even more pronounced this year as we're still in this kind of flat to down volume application environment. So I think there are a lot of really good round one candidates who are waiting on, word. They were waitlisted. And so they're in this pool with the rest of the round two crowd. In other news, we continue over on the website to roll out all these Real Humans MBA alumni articles. And we've done like 15 of them. And we've got, McKinsey, Bain, BCG, Citi, Morgan Stanley, Google, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon, all these great companies and careers. And just, it's been fascinating as I see these keep rolling out to read about these individuals and see the path they're taking and just the role that the MBA plays in their career. There's still more on the way. I can't even tell you how many, but I think they're at least like three times more than what we've rolled out. So there are a lot of them coming.
Honestly, Graham, I'd say, as I've mentioned before, I think this is great content. And I did actually post one of the stories to Reddit not too long ago, and it did get some real positive feedback, which sometimes you post stuff to Reddit, they're like, well, you shouldn't be posting it over here, you're promoting your stuff, this, that, and the other. But when it's really good content, it gets that respect. So no doubt that this Real Human series, looking at alums and then sort of taking a step back, which schools they went to, and then going through some of that progression is really interesting, I think, for our applicant community.
Yes. And speaking of Real Humans, I have some exciting news. We're going to roll out of the first Real Humans audio project, which is going to be a podcast episode where I actually sat down and talked to a couple of students. I'm not going to say what school because it's a surprise, but it's a leading MBA program. Some would argue one of the best in the world. And we're going to roll out a podcast featuring a couple of kids from that program and hear all about their story. And so we're going to bring some of the Real Human stuff into the podcast over the long term here. One other thing is that we need reviews. So please review this podcast. If you enjoy what Alex and I do every week, it really helps us when you come in and leave a review in iTunes or follow us on Spotify. Whatever you can do to support this podcast helps. Alex, one last tidbit before we kind of dive in and look at a few ApplyWire entries for Wiretaps this week. I wanted to give everyone an update. You now have 171 likes. So people are continuing to like the content that you provide in the community. I've moved up a bit, but I'm still only at 50. Need to do more posting, obviously. And I think you're clearly the front runner here. So I'm kind of seeding all hope of catching you. But it's great to see all the content you're providing to the community and their response to it.
Yeah, quite honestly, it's really cool to see the community sort of gelling. I mean, we have a number of other community members now with stars on their, by their sort of profile or whatever, which signals they've got a certain number of likes, and that's continuing to grow. So yeah, I'm excited to see how things develop, and for sure people are sharing some really good insights. So hopefully it's helpful for the applicant community.
Yeah, I think it is. And we could not do this Wiretaps show without support. And I wanted to kind of just thank Kellogg and their evening and weekend MBA program, because they've been supporting this podcast, as many of our listeners know, for several months now. And I wanted our users and listeners to know that you can reach your highest career goals while earning an MBA part-time. The evening and weekend MBA program at the Kellogg School of Management, which is conveniently located at their downtown Chicago campus, offers flexible study options to fit your lifestyle and match your experience. By graduation, you share the same toolkit, skills, and network as the school's most prominent alumni, and everyone should head over to kellogg.northwestern.edu/EW to learn more about that program. So Alex, without further ado, should we get started? I know you picked out 3 ApplyWire entries. We've been getting a lot of ApplyWire entries on the site. And I think part of that's because, you know, it's kind of, some people are cropping up already for the next cycle. But also there are fewer people, you know, dealing with decisions. And we're going to get into that probably, you know, in March and April when round 2 decisions come out. So we're going to keep the focus on next year's crop of candidates and the challenges that they face as they consider application. But anything else you wanted to add before we dive in?
No, let's get going.
All right. So this is Wiretaps candidate number 1. So this person is applying to START in 2021, and they're looking at Tuck, HBS, INSEAD, MIT Sloan, Oxford, and Stanford. They are currently working at Google as a senior manager. They previously had worked over at Deloitte as a strategy consultant, and they also spent some time doing Teach for America. Post-MBA career goal is to get into venture capital or private equity or perhaps even entrepreneurship. The GRE score is a 320, the GPA 3.33, and they would like to be somewhere in either San Fran, New York, Singapore, or Austin, kind of all tech hubs of sorts, and they're currently located in Palo Alto. And they did mention that they don't view themselves as a good test taker. And so they, you know, I think they've taken both the GMAT and the GRE a few times. Alex, you had some conversation with this individual, and they did share some additional kind of color on their candidacy. So do you want to kind of break this down? I mean, this person, you know, they have 9 years of work experience and have done some impressive things. But what's your take on this candidate and their chances at the top schools they're considering?
Yeah, I mean, this to me, Graham, is a sort of a Jekyll and Hyde type candidacy. And I don't know if that's the right way to think about it. But on the one hand, I'm looking at the work profile and thinking, wow, this person's done some really, really cool things. We know that ADCOM generally likes those folks that go do work at with Teach for America. People that do that, generally high-profile people, then they go on and do some wonderful things afterwards. This person has sort of done that via Deloitte in strategy consulting. And then it seems like really strong experience at Google, currently as a senior manager and managing several people and so on and so forth. So the work experience itself at 9 years is a little bit longer. So the challenge there will be to make sure that the candidate shows real good fit for each of the programs that they're applying. They show that they're someone that's going to be involved, engaged, and so on and so forth. But clearly, from a work experience standpoint, this candidate has a lot to bring to the program. So I would label that side of it as super strong. The other side of it, the 320 GRE / 333 GPA from a Vanderbilt liberal arts degree, I'd say that's going to be the challenge. In terms of, whilst those numbers aren't terrible, relative to the strength and the quality of the work experience, I think they're a little bit less and potentially can drag the candidate down a notch. Overall. So that's going to be the challenge, Graham, I think, is how to convince ADCOM that they will thrive in the curriculum and do very well academically so that they can really take advantage of all the rest of the experiences that the MBA programs offer, which I think it will be a little bit of a challenge with these numbers.
Yeah, this is tricky. And I want to note the liberal arts degree from Vanderbilt was in history, fine arts, and anthropology. So in my mind, I mean, this individual, they kind of need the MBA if they want to do the kind of heavy lifting finance stuff. So there's that aspect of it, meaning they did mention that some people at Google have, you know, left Google and gone on to do PE or VC directly. But they point out that they, you know, they have this deficit and that they feel like they need to study some of these things. And I understand that. I think that makes sense. The thing that jumps out at me the most is that not only do the numbers on the academic side look weak when you compare them to their work experience, but they also look weak when you compare them to people who are getting into some of these schools on their list, namely, you know, particularly Harvard and Stanford and even MIT. So I'm worried because I also think that when you have 9 years of work experience, as you correctly point out, you got to show the admissions team that you're going to be involved. This isn't a transactional thing where you're just coming in to get the degree and get out. You're going to be someone who is active. And I worry that, especially at HBS and Stanford, schools that have a reputation for taking people a little bit on the younger end of the spectrum, I just worry that, you know, unlike, say, maybe MIT or Wharton or something where there seems to be a little bit more leeway with extensive work experience, I'm a little nervous about this candidate. So the first thing that jumped out at me was, you know, they have Tuck on the list and they have Oxford and INSEAD as, you know, kind of non-M7 schools. But I was like, there's some options in between those groups. And I just wondered, you know, does it make sense for this person to go over to Europe and get the degree? The only thing I could think of was that it is a one-year format. They have had a kind of global career with Google thus far, managing teams in pretty far-flung places. And so, you know, it could be that INSEAD in particular makes some sense. It's a fast degree, which works well with an older candidate. There is a Singapore campus, which fits with this person's experience working in that market and managing team members there. So it's possible. I just also wondered, like, are there other U.S. schools that maybe wouldn't have quite the, you know, high, you know, such a high bar with the academics and things that would serve them well? And I'm thinking of even, you know, I don't know, some of the schools out in California, whether it's UCLA or Berkeley or, you know, even some of the schools on the East Coast or in the Midwest, like, you know, the Chicago schools. So I don't know what you think about that, but I'm a little worried about the combination of being old, I mean, relatively old, and the weaker numbers and still looking at very top schools.
I think the challenge there, Graham, and get your opinion on this, is to execute on their goals, i.e. get options for private equity, venture capital. You really are needing to target the very best programs that you can, right? So the amount of opportunity to go into sort of venture capital, private equity out of schools just outside of the very top just becomes that much more challenging if the candidate doesn't have the finance nor the private equity venture capital experience going into the MBA experience.
Yeah, the only thing I would say about that, because I did think about that a little bit, is that this person's living in Palo Alto, working at Google in a fairly senior role. And so my hope is that regardless of where they go to B school, they have a Rolodex of individuals in the Bay Area that they can kind of call up and try to navigate their way into that field. But I agree with you. It's not an easy field to break into, especially if you don't have the like finance chops, right? So yeah, there's a lot. Again, I think this person seems great. Like the work experience is great. Teach for America is always, as you said, excellent and well-regarded by the ADCOM. So it's a tough call. I mean, I think this person should certainly apply to some of these top schools. I just want to make sure they have a full picture of their odds and, you know, whether they need to kind of balance out with another school or two in there that guys like between Oxford and, you know, Tuck, for example.
I completely agree with that. And one of my questions to the candidate when I first sort of corresponded on ApplyWire was to that point, are people able to get from Google in a similar role to private equity venture capital? Because of the nature of the role, perhaps, like you say, they have their own network to help access that those opportunities. Another question, Graham, let's presume 320 is the tops. This person, I think, has taken the standardized test several times. 3.33 GPA out of a liberal arts. Are you going to advise this candidate to take any additional coursework?
I think it wouldn't hurt, especially given that they've been out of the classroom for a really long time, and presumably their transcript doesn't have a lot of, you know, econ or stats or calc or, you know. So, yeah, if they were to take even, you know, HBX Core or MBA Math or do some of these online classes that shows not only a commitment to going off to get the MBA, but a readiness for the type of content they're going to see, that would help. So, yeah, that's a really good point that we almost forgot to throw in there that, yeah, that would be helpful, I think.
No, I completely agree. And I think even to the extent that I think this person really needs to prove readiness, like you suggest, there is no doubt schools are going to look at this work experience and sort of, I'm not saying necessarily salivate, but they're going to be really impressed. But they're going to be really wanting the candidate to show them assurance on the academic side. So I think if they took that step, that would really help.
Agreed. All right. So let's, thanks to that person for their post. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person also wants to start business school in the fall of 2021, and they are applying to Berkeley, Dartmouth, Michigan, Kellogg, NYU Stern, UCLA, and Wharton. They've been working in supply chain management and kind of manufacturing with a Fortune Top 50 company. And post-MBA, they want to be in the tech domain, and they're looking at places like Amazon, Apple, Google, HP, IBM, the usual suspects. They got a few more on the list here. GMAT score 720, GPA 3.90, and they will have 3.5 years of work experience by the time they matriculate. They're located in Atlanta, but would love to relocate to the West Coast post-MBA. And they mentioned that they'd love to get into like a product marketing management role for hardware at a tech firm, by kind of using that knowledge they have on the back end of product development, because they've been working in kind of, you know, manufacturing, logistics, sourcing. And then in the long term, they want to do strategic sourcing leadership for a tech hardware company. And I think they also are really interested in how these companies use identify suppliers and use them in the developing world, and some of the positive social and economic impact that can happen from foreign direct investment like that. So that's the sort of candidate in a nutshell. You had some dialogue with this individual. You pointed out they only have 2 years of experience at this time. What was the dialogue around, and what do you think of this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, I think this candidate has a lot of sort of upside potential. Like you say, at this point, they have 2 years of experience. They're planning to apply next season. At matriculation, it'll be 3.5 years. They're on a very positive trajectory. I think they have two promotions at work at this point, and they have the opportunity for a third promotion right around round one application deadline time, right? So in the fall of this year, autumn of this year. So one of the questions that they had was sort of, you know, when should they apply, round one or round two? Is it worth waiting to round two to get one, that little bit of extra experience under their belt, but also have that promotion? And that's always going to be a little bit of a quandary for a candidate like this. I would suggest if they're not from an overrepresented profile, i.e. Indian, male, tech, you know, those sorts of profiles, then applying in round two can be fine. What I would do probably in this case is split my applications between rounds one and round two to sort of, you know, hedge my bets a little bit in that case. I mean, quite honestly, Graham, I think there's a lot of potential here. They also suggest that they've done some good sort of extracurriculars, as they say, that reflect several core values, leadership, mentorship, and development. So that's all very good. Schools really like that. So they have a 720 GMAT grade. And quite honestly, we talked about this a little bit before we came on air or before we came to record this podcast. And quite frankly, when I first responded to this candidate on ApplyWide, this was also in the back of my mind. is the 720 GMAT good enough if they have time to retake it? It's a ridiculous question to ask, Graham, because they have a 3.9 GPA, so there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that this person is wicked smart and will do well academically. But I'll throw it back to you, Graham. It's a 720 GMAT. They have time to retake. If they think that they can knock it out of the ballpark at 750 or whatever, should they do that, or should they move past that stuff and spend the next, you know, three quarters of a year or whatever just really pushing themselves hard at work and in their extracurriculars?
Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, my initial view when I saw this candidate was, on the younger side, you know, 3.9 is great, but I wanted to know, like, well, what school is that from and how well regarded is it, and how challenging, you know, was the major? I mean, assuming all that lines up, then the 3.9 is a 3.9 and it's brilliant. And, you know, the 720, you know, as you say, it's kind of absurd to even think about it, because, you know, if the goal of the GMAT and the GPA is to demonstrate academic aptitude, they've clearly done that with this 3.9, unless they went to, like, you know, basket weaving university or something, you know. But it's definitely, if they feel like they're a brainiac and could literally spend a few weeks and go in and bang out a 750 on the test, it would open up a lot of additional doors, as well as, you know, potential for additional scholarship dollars. So I'm on some level, I'm kind of like, wow, if they could do better, why not? Especially because they're young. So, you know, as we did, we had that a whole episode on the podcast where we just talked about deferred enrollment programs for college seniors who want to go off to business school and get an early acceptance letter that allows them to, you know, work for a couple of years. Well, you know, we know that those individuals, when they get into these programs, they have to have a stunning academic profile. And so someone on the slightly lower end of work experience, at the time of application, at least, you know, would benefit from really great numbers. I wanted to kind of call attention to the extracurriculars. I know that they say they're good and they indicate some, you know, that they follow some key areas that they feel are important, like mentorship and leadership or whatever it was. But there was like no detail here, and I was a little nervous about that. I was kind of like, well, what are you doing and how strong is it? I just wanted to know more. There just wasn't enough there. And I, you know, but, you know, beyond that, I mean, helpful to know, like, what's the breakdown on the percentiles of the GMAT that they did take? Like, is it a 720 that's balanced? Did they tank on the math and ace the verbal? Like, it'd just be good to know that as well, because I think that can be instructive, you know, especially when it's like combined with their undergraduate major. So like, imagine, I don't think this is the case, but if this person was like a history major and, you know, did poorly on the quantitative section of the GMAT, well, that gives me a completely different view than if they were like a econ and finance major who went into operations. You know, I mean, it's just, yeah, understanding their kind of, yeah, academic background a little bit more would be useful. But yeah, I mean, I like the candidate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing they're an engineering major, but yeah. I mean, I think you're right. If they're a liberal arts major, it does present some different issues. But I'm guessing, based on their work experience, that they're probably, like you say, either on the econ side or on the engineering side, so in some respect.
And one of the big attributes that this candidate have is that they actually mentioned that they are a big fan of the Clear Admit podcast. So I know we know
so
that's going to go
from the get-go.
No, but I do think the other thing we should just say to this candidate is, be careful as you apply to sort of demonstrate maturity wherever the opportunity is offered to you. And that's why, you know, taking on responsibility at work and going after these promotions and such is going to be really useful. I personally feel that if they don't have the promotion by round one and they want to apply, I would almost recommend it. And as long as like their reference letters maybe hint that this is coming, and they could always send an update to the schools if they get the promotion in between round one and round two, like before the interviews are offered or something, like that can always be done too. I always recommend, like, if you can apply early and your recommenders are saying glowing things and there's like a promotion coming down the pipeline, that might be enough. But again, this is a good candidate. They just need to, just kind of get everything together and think about that GMAT score.
Yeah, I would reflect and say, you know, this is potentially a good candidate. Just make sure that you present your best profile. And if that means retaking the GMAT because 720 isn't your best score, then why wouldn't you do that? You're aiming for the very best programs in the world, or at least you should be. So that's another thing to look at. The school selection is decent, and I do like the spread of schools. So you're talking sort of top 15, 16, as well as one or two M7. I would add in Sloan to this mix, and if they, you know, if they have the wherewithal, maybe even one or two more of the M7 caliber. But yeah, I mean, just advice we would give any candidate: don't let any elements of your application be slightly weaker than it could be if you were either to retake a test or really push for a promotion or an extra project at work to really show some stuff or whatever it might be. Make sure when you do apply, it's the best version of you in that application.
Yeah, good feedback. So let's talk about our third and final Wiretaps candidate. So this is Wiretaps candidate number 3. This person's looking at Berkeley, Columbia, MIT Sloan, NYU, Chicago Booth, and Wharton, and they also would like to start school in 2021. They've been working in public finance pre-MBA, and they are targeting investment banking and maybe private equity post-MBA, looking at companies like Bank of America, Credit Suisse, Goldman, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, etc. GMAT score is 740, GPA 3.4, they've been working for 5 years and they are located in Boston. They would love post-MBA to be in New York or San Francisco, maybe Boston again, or LA, in that order, they claim. So they mentioned in their comments that they've been working adjacent to public finance investment banking, and they're involved in the debt capital markets debt capital market transactions. And so they feel like there's a logical transition into investment banking, given that they've kind of been on the public side in terms of, you know, seeing transactions and things. And longer term is this sort of idea to go from investment banking into private equity. So you had some back and forth with this candidate. I should add that they expect to have CFA level 3 by this spring. They also mentioned that they went to a large public university that typically is more regionally known. And that's about it. They've got some management responsibility. And yeah, so you had some discussion with them. What do you think of this candidate, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, overall, clearly, again, a very smart person. Looks like they've done well at work. They say they're going to get really... I should have strong recs from managing director, excuse me, head of group and direct supervisor. So the work looks good. The numbers are good. I mean, the GPA is a little bit lower than average, but combined with the 740 GMAT, I don't think there's going to be any concerns there. So working in the finance sector, wanting to go into investment banking, private equity, all looks fine to me, Graham. And some of the extracurricular activities are also related to finance, as well as their fraternity at their undergraduate. So now I think they're on the alumni side of their fraternity for their undergrad. I just wanted to know a little bit more about the personality of this person, I guess, and just seeing if there's anything outside of the finance sort of checkbox that's really interesting about this person. Not that there's anything wrong with someone that's, you know, wholly committed to finance. And as you pointed out again before we actually came on to record, that working on the public sector side is actually quite an interesting sort of, point of differentiation in of itself. I just want to make sure that the person doesn't get just labelled as the finance guy, somewhat unidimensionally, and therefore... is as a result of that somewhat compromised in the admissions process. But it might be that that's more of a legacy of a number of years ago when we were overwhelmed in admissions with finance guys applying, wanting to go back into finance. And maybe because it's a smaller pool now, that shouldn't be quite as big a concern. What's your take on that, Graham?
Yeah, I mean, my main thing here is I think the numbers are solid, as you said. The goals and the work experience are very strong. I feel like, you know, the fact that they're coming from the public sector side of finance is really interesting and should allow them to stand out, even when compared against other finance people like who are working in investment banks or something. So they have this like public sector exposure, which I think gives them a real feather in their cap. The thing that I worried about, as you did, is, you know, are they too one-dimensional? Like, is, you know, they mentioned that, yeah, they're part of their, they're basically helping using the current chapter of their college fraternity to manage its finances. And some of their other outside activities seem finance oriented as well. And so I was like, well, what else makes this candidate tick? I mean, I'm sure that this person has other, you know, I mean, maybe they're, you know, a cyclist on the weekend, or maybe they play an instrument, or are, you know, an amateur chef, you know, or whatever it might be. They must have other.
I didn't realize you were an amateur chef too, Greg.
Oh, no. Good one. Yeah. So no, but seriously, like, are there things that this person does, just like, what, I mean, one thing would be, if when I'm in reading a file as an admissions officer, I'm often thinking, okay, what clubs is this person going to join in business school? So clearly this person might join the investment banking club or the private equity club, but what else? Like, are they going to join even, you know, good old stuff like the wine tasting club or the, you know, European club or the Latin American business club or whatever it is, right? Just good to know, like, where this person fits in and what else, you know, makes their candidacy multifaceted. But I think overall, I like this candidate. They have a lot of interesting, you know, kind of work experience. And the school selection makes sense to me. I mean, they've got a lot of the, they've got, you know, obviously Columbia and Booth and Stern and Wharton are kind of the big finance powerhouses. You could even throw MIT Sloan in there as being, having a really strong reputation in the domain of finance. So they have a lot of the right schools here, given their, you know, their goals and given their kind of target location post-business school. But I just want to make sure that if there are other things that this person loves to do and think it can differentiate them, by all means, like, put those on display in the application.
Yeah, and I would really strongly encourage the candidate, apply Columbia Early Decision. And we've discussed this a little bit in the past, the importance of doing that. And not just applying to Columbia Early Decision, but making sure that Columbia recognizes why you believe they're a great choice for you and your goals and so on and so forth, right? So just by applying Columbia Early Decision doesn't check the box of why Columbia, but then reinforce that with a real sort of passionate sort of connection with the school, and so on and so forth. So Early Decision for Columbia for sure, I think, in this case. And getting applications into round one, if to the extent that they can, I think would be a good thing. Maybe Cornell actually should be added to this list, as, you know, in terms of another potential option for the candidate.
Yeah, I mean, New York City is at the top of their location list. So clearly, Cornell has a great network there. Obviously, so do Stern and Columbia, and actually Wharton as well. So they have a lot of options. I just encourage them to think about ways to stand out. And it could be, you know, obviously the public side of what they're doing is obviously interesting. And hopefully, I mean, what I kind of wanted to hear when they started talking about their goals was, like, I get wanting to work in investment banking, then private equity. I wanted to hear maybe some long-term government or public sector related interest, given the experience they've had, or something that, you know, kind of do good, get back into the public sector, having had both sides, you know, all the value that would bring. So anyway, I think kind of enough said, but this is an interesting candidate. Really appreciate them sharing their profile, and yeah, best of luck to them. And, you know, obviously keep us posted. I know last week we made a plea for Wiretap's featurees to kind of, you know, update us within their entries on the site. So please continue to do that. Alex, anything else on this? This kind of brings us to the end of the episode.
No, I just say we failed. We've gone longer than 30 minutes yet again, Graham, but no, three really interesting candidates. I wish all three of them the best of luck, and hopefully, you know, to the listening audience, our commentary on these three candidates helps you all think through your application strategy for the upcoming season, if that's what you're planning to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, someone who heard this podcast mentioned to me that they feel like what we're doing is almost like the Harvard Business School case method of, like, teaching management. Like, we're teaching admission strategy via kind of real world examples. So in any event, thanks so much, Alex, for picking these out. And to everyone tuning in, thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned. We got more episodes coming. We'll be back obviously next week for another episode of Wiretaps. And Alex, thanks again. We'll talk to you in a week's time.
Very good. Thanks a lot, Graham. Good luck, everyone.